Hello, and welcome to Advisory Explained. I'm your host, Kwesi Kretzinger. Join me in this series, this podcast where we discuss the complex world of advisory. We dive deep into very specific topics in the world of mergers and acquisitions, due diligence, tax, fiduciary services, and so much more, where we take complex topics and we break them down into smaller, bite-sized, palatable portions for you to understand and to understand where we can assist you. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Advisory Explained. I'm your host, Kwesi Kretzinger, and today we are going to touch a very important topic on offshore trusts. This is something that is a very powerful tool, sometimes misleading and misunderstood, but this could be a fantastic tool for you and your family for succession planning, estate planning, and just wealth preservation, and possibly tax efficiency. Today, I've got Irma Lategan from Investec with me. She's part of the tax and fiduciary team. Irma, welcome.
Thank you, Kwesi, for inviting me back.
Anytime. Irma joined us a while ago on a different episode speaking about Residency 101. Please go have a check on that episode. Irma, just for the viewers today, can you introduce yourself again and just what you and your team at Investec currently do?
Thank you, Jo. So we at Tax and Fiduciary at Investec, we assist Investec clients. So you need to be an Investec client before you can have access to us. We assist Investec clients in structuring their offshore assets, offshore holdings, trusts. We see trusts a lot in South Africa and offshore, investment holding vehicles, also at residency. So Investec about 8 years ago realized that you need to have cross-border specialists when advising and when investing for clients, either through their personal capacity or through structures like trusts, in order to have the proceeds be more efficient for them. So
Absolutely.
That's basically what we do.
Fantastic. So I've got a few questions just to run through offshore trusts specifically. I've got a lot of the answers myself, but I only know so much. That's why we have you guys, the specialists, part of the team, but also to educate the viewers. So the first one is, what are some of the primary advantages of actually having an offshore trust?
There are a few advantages, and it could be very misleading. So we've had clients come to us that was at a braai over the weekend and their friend has an offshore trust and now they want an offshore trust as well.
The braai is usually the most scary place to get tax advice.
Exactly. After a, after a few beers or so, no, not a good idea. So it's very client specific whether a trust can work for you or not. Some of the main advantages is that same with the South African trust is that the assets within the trust does not fall into your estate. So on your death, there's no estate duty on those assets in the trust. So that's the main advantage. Also, succession, it's a great succession vehicle. So you can choose who your beneficiaries in your trust will be. So for succession purposes, so it doesn't have to go through your deceased estate. It just continues for the benefit of your beneficiaries. If you leave South Africa, there's no exit tax on the assets in the trust, which is great. And for creditor protection, because the assets are held by the trust and the trustees manage the assets, it's no longer yours. So if you get sued, then it's going to be very difficult for the creditor to get their hands on the assets in the trust.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big things that people miss a lot is, and it's actually in the name, it's a trust. It's not yours, it's the trust's, and you put it in the trust of other people, i.e. the trustees. So it's very important. It's not part of our discussion today, but we'll discuss that in the future, the importance of choosing the right trustees and the right fiduciary team to assist you with your offshore trust and your local trust at the end of the day.
But just to add on that, that is also one of the drawbacks of a trust. So putting your assets in a trust means that you relinquish control of the assets.
Absolutely.
The trustees will manage the assets from then on, and it's no longer yours.
Absolutely. Irma, when should we start looking at offshore trusts?
It depends on your trustees and the cost.
Yeah.
But mainly if the trust is purely a holding vehicle, for instance, for a portfolio of investments, then our rule of thumb is around 50 million.
Rand.
Okay. 50 million rand, because the trustees' fees could be very expensive. Mm. And we don't want the cost of running the trust to eat away at the capital. So it means that the portfolio needs to make income and gain to pay for the trustees' fees and more so that the portfolio can grow. But there could also be other reasons for setting up the offshore trust. For instance, if you have an offshore company or an offshore business that you want to run, and you know this offshore business is going to grow a lot, to start it within an offshore trust so that it doesn't grow in your own estate, but it grows offshore in the trust.
Absolutely. One of the very key things that we just need to remember always with that is when you start doing offshore companies and also with offshore trusts is attribution, bringing stuff back into the country via controlled foreign companies, etc. So it's very, very important to make sure that your entire setup is done correctly from day one.
Yes.
My next question is pitfalls and disadvantages. What are the things that people actually need to consider? The things that they usually overlook when setting up their offshore structures?
We've already touched on the expensiveness of offshore structures. And also the loss of control of your assets. So you need to be comfortable with your trustees so that they control the assets. Normally in these usual jurisdictions that people usually set up trusts, they are very highly regulated and the trustees must be registered companies, registered trust companies, and they have rules to follow. So they won't necessarily steal your assets, but so there are some comfort in those jurisdictions. So you need to be careful about picking your jurisdiction. Then the funding of offshore trusts and companies is so important that you do that correctly, because South Africa has a lot of anti-avoidance rules that could kick in and immediately tax everything that happens offshore in South Africa. You've also mentioned place of effective management that could drag the whole structure into the South African tax net, so that defeats the purpose.
And then you still pay the excessive fees in your offshore jurisdiction.
Correct.
We made a joke earlier to say my question was where do we set up these offshore structures? And like you said, it's based on sort of what is your preference to a certain extent, what will the trust hold at the end of the day? But then a big part of it is what can your pocket afford?
Definitely. So we get a lot of clients that ask us, I have 100 million, I want to set up an offshore trust, where should I do it? That's not something that we can choose and we can advise a client necessarily on. We can tell them where the usual suspects are, the jurisdictions. Yeah. But it's a very personal question, and it mainly depends on your trustees because you need to have this trusted relationship with your trustees. So where do you find trustees that you trust, and where do they sit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is such a phenomenal point to touch on. Well, you spoke high level on funding your offshore trust. So what are the main ways that you can fund the offshore trust, and what's the pros and cons almost from your perspective on these methods?
That comes back to the anti-avoidance rules that I spoke about earlier. Yeah, there are other ways also to fund a trust, more creative ways. But in those instances, we recommend that clients get advice. But the normal ways is a donation. So you can donate your assets to an offshore trust, but that is really inefficient.
Yeah. Because start at the worst and start moving forward.
Exactly. So as soon as you make a donation to an offshore trust, then our Income Tax Act says that all of the income and gain that is made by that offshore trust is immediately attributable back to the donor and taxed in his hands. So that means that everything will be taxed in your hands in South Africa if you purely donate funds to an offshore trust to set it up. So the second alternative is obviously making a loan to an offshore trust.
Which most people do.
Most people do it. And then the question comes in, do you charge interest on the loan or not? And there are, again, more anti-avoidance rules that say that you need to charge interest of at least arm's length, which is market-related, and the official rate of interest, which is defined in the Income Tax Act as repo plus one. So whichever is the higher, you need to fund it at that. Otherwise, attribution will kick in again, so you'll be taxed on that little bit that you're not charging interest on would be seen as a donation. So that can be attributed back, and then you've got the transfer pricing rules in Section 31 that says you must charge interest, otherwise the interest is deemed to be received by you and taxed, and there's a donation, and it's just a mess.
It's absolutely a mess, and just like you said, and just for the viewers, so we're speaking about individuals financing offshore trusts. And the reason I'm mentioning it is that loan account is out of the individual's name to the offshore trust. That means that loan account is carrying interest, which is interest income. And let's be honest, if you have a offshore company and an offshore trust, you most probably in the highest tax bracket in South Africa. So you're paying tax on that deemed interest, or well, let's call it actual interest, but it's not flowing. It's just on loan account that keeps on growing. So your loan account keeps on growing, and you have that interest in your personal name, which you actually have to pay tax on every year.
And if you die, that is an asset in your estate, so you pay estate duty on that as well.
Oh, so very, very inefficient. But that's, that is the most used and most common way to finance your offshore trust.
Correct.
And trust-to-trust distributions?
Trust-to-trust distributions became a thing in 2023. From an exchange control perspective, a South African trust was never allowed to hold and still isn't allowed to hold offshore assets directly. But the mechanism was introduced in 2023 by SARS and SARB that now allow South African trust to make a distribution to an offshore trust that is a beneficiary of the South African trust. So if you have a South African trust with liquid assets in it, liquid funds, it needs to be funds, it can't be assets.
Let's call it 50 million rand.
Let's call it 50 million rand. You can make a distribution of that 50 million rand directly into your offshore trust and fund it by that, by making that distribution. Although we do anticipate that SARS is going to lift their eyebrows about this and also say that attribution applies. But there are a lot of good arguments to say that attribution will not apply. That means that the South African Trust cannot make a donation to the offshore trust because trusts can't make donations. So that's the basically the main argument.
That is the main argument. I still have some reservations and some fears on my internal being on trust-to-trust distributions purely because of the SARB process, the SARS and SARB process to actually do it. I feel there's still quite a lot of risk in it, and it's very new. It's still really new. Like you said, it came about at the end August 2023. So there's not been a lot going through. I know a lot of people have applied, a lot have been shot down, a lot have gone through. But the question is, will SARS take Section 7-8, the attribution rules, into account on the trust somewhere in the future?
That is the risk. So whenever clients come to us with a trust-to-trust application that they want to follow this mechanism of funding their offshore trust, we do recommend that they get a Section 2-3 opinion from a reputable tax practitioner to say that the attribution rules will not apply so that they're at least protected from some penalties should SARS win the argument, which I doubt they will, but you never know.
You never know, but you have to be prepared. And part of being trusted advisors, like we both try our best to be every single day to our clients, is telling them the risk. even though sometimes we do advocate for a bit more of a risky structure, the right thing always to do is to tell your clients, listen, this is the full scope of all of the risk that's on the table. It's your choice at the end of the day. Here's two options. This one is more risky. This one is less risky, but you get two outcomes. But being a trusted advisor is telling them this is the full scope of what could come about.
You absolutely need to put all the cards on the table, yes.
Correct. My next question is, let's go one generation further down the line. So now, my dad, as an example, we have an offshore trust. I'm a beneficiary of said offshore trust. Now that trust makes a distribution to me. Let's just call the Vanilla Mauritian Trust makes a distribution to me. As a South African tax resident, I still live right here in Cape Town. What's the effect? How are we taxed as South African individuals on distributions, both income and capital distributions from an offshore trust?
So, Kwesi, the tax in the South African beneficiary's hands would firstly depend on how the trust was funded. If your dad funded the trust by way of a donation and the attribution rules applied, it means that all the income and gain in that trust would be taxed in his hands in South Africa. So that means that everything in the trust would have been taxed in South Africa already. His initial donation that he made would have been after tax money, and then all of the income and gain in the trust as well as a result of the attribution. So that would be a pure capital pot trust. Pure capital that comes out of a trust is not taxed in South Africa. So all the beneficiaries in South Africa would receive it tax-free. Now, if your dad was no longer alive or the attribution rules did not apply, so he funded it by way of an interest-bearing loan and none of the anti-avoidance rules applied, then it is very important that the trustees keep POTS accounting. So POTS accounting is that they keep a separate pot for the original capital, a separate pot for the income that is earned by the trust, and a separate pot for the gains and the dividends.
Yeah.
SARS will tax the distribution on the source of from what the distribution is made. If the distribution was made from pure capital, no tax. If the distribution was made from income, then there will be income tax in the hands of the beneficiary in South Africa. Same with capital gains and the same with dividends. So that's basically how distributions are taxed in South Africa.
So besides for the point of how it was funded, distributions out of a trust is very much similar, an offshore trust, to South African trusts at the end
Correct.
Of the day.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Except that offshore trusts, for South African trusts, if you don't distribute the income and gain in the same year to South African beneficiaries, then the trust pays tax at a high rate. Where offshore trusts can keep that income and gain over years and distribute it at a later time, and then it will be taxed in the South African resident's hands.
Interesting. Last thing, and this is probably the most, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but irritating thing about offshore trusts and anything offshore, and that's the annual reporting.
Oh, annual reporting. So, as I mentioned before, the usual suspect trust jurisdictions are very highly regulated. Mm. They need to file common reporting standard reports every year, and they need to file this, which is similar to Common Reporting Standards, FATCA for the US. And that states all the distributions that were made by the trust, what is in the trust, and all of the main players in the trust needs to be reported. That costs money. That's part of the fee of the trustee. And then those reports are shared worldwide between countries. So in essence, South Africa should know who are beneficiaries of all offshore trusts.
Technically,
and vice versa.
Yeah.
So the plan is that all tax authorities know what's going on in the world.
And then back in South Africa, you also have a reportable arrangement if you have a loan of more than 10 million. So if that balance, or if it increases, i.e., you have a loan of at least 10 million to an offshore structure, then you also have to report on that annually, but that's local to SARS.
Yes, correct.
Which is also an additional administrative and costly burden in South Africa. And that's where I completely agree with you. There's a certain level of wealth that you need to have before you start looking at it. Now, I know you spoke about 50 million rand earlier. I think I'm a little bit more aggressive. I think from 30 million, depending on how you are using your income, your growth strategy, where you are in your life stage, etc., then you can start looking at offshore structures.
Yeah, it's very much fact-dependent.
Very much.
Yeah, so it depends on what's happening in the trust. Also the cost of the trustees. So you get very expensive trustees, like in Switzerland.
Yeah. let's not beat around the bush.
then you get the more cheaper jurisdictions because they do this on a daily basis.
Mm.
For instance, Mauritius has about 100 or 200 trust companies. So they're cheaper, but you also need to be comfortable with the quality of the output.
Exactly. On that, I know sometimes it's a bit controversial, but offshore doesn't necessarily mean off continent.
Yes.
So we have structures that we've been putting in place for clients through Namibia, for argument's sake, which is technically also offshore if you take it into the context of moving funds abroad and doing offshore structures at a significantly reduced cost.
Yes.
However, you need to understand there's certain limits, if I can say it like that, that you will receive in your comfort via Namibia versus Switzerland at the end of the day.
Yes. Now, definitely. Oh, we also see Namibian structures. Another thing is that you need to pick your trust jurisdiction so that it's a tax-friendly jurisdiction, so that the trust does not necessarily pay tax in that jurisdiction on its income and gain, so that it can grow tax-free offshore. So that is one of the big benefits of having an offshore trust in the right jurisdiction.
Absolutely. And like you rightly said, that is a fact decision.
Yes.
It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not my preference is Mauritius or BVI or Guernsey or the Caymans. It's based on what you actually want to do at the end of the day. And with that comes in the question of what's going to be in the trust, how active is going to be the trust, and are you going to work back into Africa, for instance?
Yes.
With the DTA between Africa and Mauritius is quite effective and beneficial. So we've set up quite a lot of structures with offshore trusts somewhere, but with a Mauritian company specifically under it. Due to it working effectively with DTAs throughout Africa.
Yes, no, that definitely works. Another thing that we can touch on, but also in a later podcast, because it's going to become long, is the Mauritian trust structures.
Absolutely.
The resident and non-resident Mauritian trust structures and how that works.
As well as the different type of companies in Mauritius.
Yes.
So your GBCs, etc. So I think that's a fantastic topic for a future episode. Irma, just before we wrap up, in your opinion, what are some key takeaways for our viewers today based on offshore trusts? What do you think should be the, let's call it, nuggets for them to remember and just to consider before they embark on this journey of offshore structuring?
Don't take bribe advice.
Yeah.
Because it might not necessarily be for you. It's very complex. Mm.
Chops and tax doesn't go together.
No, it doesn't. The funding of the trust is very important.
Mm.
And you need to get advice if you're not following the vanilla way of either an interest-bearing loan or if you, don't do a donation.
No.
So interest-bearing loan or get advice.
Yeah.
Definitely. And if the trust is set up correctly, it could be a very beneficial tax and estate planning vehicle. So I would still get advice on where it is set up and trust your trustees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And that is a wrap. Thank you, Irma. Thank you for joining us today. And I hope the viewers really enjoyed the session on offshore trusts. As you guys heard, it's not as easy and as straightforward as a South African trust. You set it up and you just basically continue. There's a lot of costs. There's a lot of compliance. There's a lot of red tape. And with that comes advice. So please reach out to either us or Irma and her team or your preferred advisory team to get the right advice. Thank you.